Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Wow, what a show I've got lined up for you today. How are we all feeling as we head into the weekend? Looking forward to it? Have you had a good week? Worked hard? Managed to take some action? I hope so. Welcome one and all, you're listening to the Nick Rowe podcast. Today I've headed over from the 20-foot shipping container across Auckland Harbour Bridge to sunny Mount Wellington to sit with and welcome a really progressive and compelling CEO onto our podcast. If you managed to listen last week's podcast with my special guest CEO, Hamilton City Council, Richard Briggs, thank you for listening. You would have heard that at the beginning of the year, I sat down with pen and paper and my journal, as I do every year, and started to think about interesting executives, interesting people who I wanted to get onto our podcast. My filter system was simple, as it normally is. He or she had to be doing exceptional things. They had to be making a difference. They had to be challenging the status quo, and finally they had to want to impart their knowledge in the pursuit of helping others improve. Today I'm in a wonderful head office of an iconic business, and sitting next to me is a very special CEO who I felt ticked all these boxes. I'm delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of Delmaine Fine Foods, Jerry Lynch. Welcome onto the show, Jerry. It's a true pleasure to welcome you and to be welcomed from your offices and all your people here. Jerry recently moved from Mars, New Zealand to the CEO position here at Delmaine Fine Foods. And I'm going to ask Jerry to share more about his career in a bit more detail. But again, as you listen to our conversation today, really think about and take time to remember a few things, but this in particular. We're all just humans doing what we can do. Nothing's out of reach if you're willing to try. A huge welcome to each and every one of you who are listening and made a genuine decision to put the spotlight on yourself in the quest of improving. Thank you for tuning in. It means a great deal to me. And I know we've got around 19,000 listeners around the world. It's mind-blowing and humbling to myself. So welcome to you all. If you like what you hear, can I ask you a massive favour? And those of you who know me well, you know I hate doing this, but jump over to iTunes, subscribe, hit the subscribe button under the Nick Rowe podcast and leave a message if you can. That would be really helpful. Thank you so very much. My name is Nick Rowe, and yes, I'm thrilled to be your host today. To those brand new to the show, welcome. I hope you're going to get a lot of information, insight, and content from my conversation today with Jerry. But just a little bit about myself. I'm a professional coach and work with executives, individuals, and organisations that want to get results and improve. I've been helping people since 2006 and still can't believe I get to work with some amazing people, both here in New Zealand and around the world. My purpose for these podcasts is simple: to uncover thought, discover why, and ultimately dig much deeper than anybody else has ever done in the pursuit of helping us all to improve. Our podcast will always be free, but more importantly, there will always be conversations, not interviews. Conversations with some interesting people around. CEOs, I did some research recently, but CEOs to me are like anyone else, human. Humans that are really trying to do the best they can, be it in sometimes difficult situations. They don't have all the answers, and they can't please everybody all the time. Sometimes they have to make that hard decision. It goes with a health warning, I feel, that being a CEO is not for everybody. So without further ado, sit back, relax, welcome on Jerry to the Nick Rowe podcast. Happy Friday. How are you feeling?
Thanks, Nick. It's great to be here. Really, really enjoying. Looking forward to the conversation with you.
Well, I hope it's going to be interesting and interesting to yourself. But somebody who I followed yourself, I followed your career for many years from afar, and I've been recently really blown away with how you're taking on technology as a CEO. And every few nights, I see a video or a blog pop up on my social media feed, and it's really good because I think I'd like to understand a little bit more, but to me it shows that you're trying to share a lot of information, a lot of stuff. But just talk me through the videos, the blogs, how are they going, and what are you trying to achieve in those?
I think the reason I started doing them, as a result, when I decided to leave Mars, I wanted to up my LinkedIn profile. So yep. I got some advice from one recruiter, you need to do some articles on LinkedIn and get your name out there. And so I started doing that and learning how to, what makes a good article. And I was surprised some articles didn't get many you know, likes or responses or views. Others, you know, I hit on a subject like performance management and
boom,
you know, get 10,000 views, and you know, you can see when things resonate with people. And then I was at a FGC seminar, half yearly seminar recently, and there was a guy talking about specifically about media and getting your brand and company out there, and he talked about, you know, video being a really good way, you know, short video being a really good way of getting more hits than just articles. So I thought, okay, new to the company, I'll try. And you know, it's twofold for me. It's one, helps me to distill a topic and put it out there, and I'd love to share my views, because I think if we get better leaders throughout New Zealand, then New Zealand does better as a country. But also I want to publicise Delmain as a company, and you know, it's a, you know, relatively sort of small company in the scheme of things, so the more I can sort of tell people how great it is, the better, and it acts as a, you know, hopefully attract people to come and work here.
I think it's tremendous,
and I'm also linking in with people in Delmain, so it's almost an internal communication as well to show them how proud I am about working here. So I get lots of, you know, likes obviously from people who work at Delmain as well, which is great.
I shared one with Nicola, my wife. I think he was at home trying some new foods, or they were saying you and the family were getting stuck into one evening cooking, and I just thought that's brilliant, you know. Yeah, and some of yours may be done here in your office or at home late at night when you're kind of regurgitating, rethinking about your thoughts. But I just think just keep doing it. I have a face for radio, as they say, but I really feel that video content, or just anything you're putting out there that's positively going to help people think about things in a different way, it's got to be good for yourself, for your organisation, and for the community that we all work in. So what's the kind of feedback you've had from stakeholders here? Are they going, who's this crazy dude? He's just come into the business and it's all this videos going on. What have they taken to it?
They've really enjoyed it. It's been sort of something different that they haven't done before. But I've tried to involve people, so I've, you know, done a couple of videos of some of the people on the production line and got them to say a couple of things sometimes. But I think, you know, I think people just, the feedback I've had is really positive from stakeholders here, that it's just increases pride in the company when you're talking about the Brilliant. Company and what you're trying to do here. So
well, I'll definitely look forward to seeing those evolve over the next few years and just follow your journey. But silly question, but have you ever done a podcast?
I've done one with a guy called Sean Callahan, Storytelling.
Okay.
So he's got a podcast, Storytelling. So he got me on, and they do a podcast in terms of tell a story, business story, and then they rate it. And so I've got a reasonably good rating, so I was quite pleased with that. But that's the only podcast I've ever done. So,
but I know you're a member of, we're going to come on to a lot of areas today. I hope we're going to cover a few things that are of use to our listeners and around your association and the things you're involved with. But before we get into that, just a small note that what Jerry and I are discussing and sharing with everyone today, it's the Jerry's personal views and thoughts, and not the organisation that he is a CEO of or has been a managing director in the past of. So just to caveat that, we don't want any legal letters coming through. So Jerry, just for our listeners here in New Zealand and around the world that may not know you, can you introduce yourself and share with us your position, please?
Yeah, so I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Delmain Fine Foods. I have been for the last 3 months.
Baptism of fire?
Baptism of fire, yeah. So I'll give you a quick short history on me. So I'm originally from the UK, Irish parents. So my dad used to say to me, if you're born in a stable, it doesn't make you a horse. So that was one of his words of wisdom. So yeah, I don't know where I am really. I'm not really English, I'm not really Irish, I'm not really New Zealander, so I'm sort of, you know, mixed up kid, if you like. I came over to New Zealand, so I did an engineering degree. I worked for Cadbury for 13 years, half in manufacturing and half in marketing. Came over to New Zealand in 2000. And then after about 4 years, I went to Frucor in marketing manager, looking after some of their water products and MyZone. Fitted with my sports, I loved doing running. So Bevan Doherty, we were sponsoring him at the time, MyZone. So that was a good association. And that was probably, I had my, probably one of my big oh shit moments in my career, which I get, I've got some of our leaders, some of my team to talk to our staff about, you know, in terms of where I've cocked up in my career. And you know, I took on that role hoping to be the marketing director, and after 2 years the marketing director left, I applied for the role and I didn't get it, and I was disappointed but not surprised. I hadn't sort of proactively shown his boss that I could do it. And also hadn't, you know, this is probably one of the things that probably comes through my career a little bit, of a bit of lack of confidence in the imposter syndrome. So I didn't really believe that I could do it, and I hadn't mentally got myself into that space. So although I was disappointed at not getting it, I wasn't surprised. But I did, after that point, I said, right, I'm not going to let that happen again. That's my, you know, oh shit moment, and I'll make sure I learn from that. And I had, when I joined Mars not long after that, and I was 11 years at Mars, so I joined as a marketing director. And then after about a year or so, I was speaking to the general manager, and she said that she was going to be leaving in a year's time. And I hadn't thought about general management up until that point, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, I wanted to go for that. So I worked closely with her in terms of what was her job, you know, can I get to know your boss, and also just mentally getting myself into a position that I believed that I could do the job. And I've talked to many people over the years in terms of when you take a promotion, and it's, you know, and found out really it's a natural thing that you doubt yourself, and you're not sure if you can do it, and you know this imposter syndrome that people talk about is real.
Inner voice.
Yes, yeah, inner voice. Can you really do it? And the reality is, when you step into a new position, you're never going to be the finished article. You're always going to be, there always will be development gaps. But it's about, you know, it's about the potential to grow into that role, not about whether you're right for it on day one. So she left, and I got the role, and you know, I grew into the role. And at first I wasn't particularly confident. I reached out to other general managers around Australia and overseas in Mars to get advice, and you know, I got some great advice. And I think that's one of the learnings for me in any role that you go to is. Build a network where you can, you know, you can talk to different people who are in those positions and learn from others. You know, so I've always taken an approach that whatever job I'm in, I can learn from someone else. Like, there's always someone who's been there longer, who's done things differently, that will just help shape my feeling. So that curiosity, I think, is a really important skill for any leader. So I grew into that role, and through the, you know, 8.5 years I was in that role, I constantly tried to develop my leadership. I took on a regional role at the same time, and I got to a point where I'd been in the role for 8.5 years, and I wasn't mobile from family situation, and needed a new challenge. So they, you know, looked around, did a lot of work on my LinkedIn profile and what I wanted to do. And,
well done.
And I actually approached Delmaine. There wasn't a job being advertised, and you know, through my networks, I got to talk with the owner here, and you know, and I have the role. So it's, you know, it's a great you know, learning for me in terms of, you know, you don't just wait for a job to fall into your lap. It's go out there looking terms of what you want to do and the types of companies you want to work for, and it's very, very different to Mars, and you know, some things are chalk and cheese. But what I love about it is, you know, there's passionate people in this business who I can help unlock that potential. So, you know, that's really what I get out of bed in the morning for. It's not about, you know, the money or the profit or, you know, necessarily the sales. It's about, you know,
the people.
How can I build a culture where, you know, the results come as a result of the culture, as opposed to just focusing on the profit or the sales at the expense of the people.
Great insight. Thank you very much for sharing that with us all. And, you know, especially from your time at Frucor, that our shit moment through to Mars and transitioning out. There's areas I want to speak about on so many levels in there, and also some things around culture. Around, I know you and I have spoken about things, you know, getting up to America and doing some investigation up there, but. Just before we go into like the now or the future, just take us all back a bit if you can. Just talk us through your growing up as a child, growing up in the UK with that your father saying about being a horse in the barn. What was it like for you growing up? Talk us through that.
So I'm big family. So I've got 5 sisters. Luckily, I had a family down the road who had 6.
5 sisters, yeah. And you.
Yeah, 5 sisters, and I'm in the middle. And I'm in the middle. So my dad did spoil me, and his, you know, his generation were, you know, women's works in the kitchen. That's right. You know, and he worked. He was the breadwinner. You know, so very old fashioned ideals. And I sort of rebelled a bit. Yeah, I didn't like to be there. I didn't like to be the sport one in the family. My sisters would rib me. But luckily there was a family down the road, another Irish-Italian family who had six boys and one girl. So they're sort of almost another family for me. But I grew up, I suppose I was average kid at school. I mean, wasn't an A student. I wasn't particularly confident. I was, I didn't like the limelight necessarily. And I grew up and played football. I really enjoyed football, got into the school team, but I wasn't a star. You know, I was the steady Eddie, if you like, the centre-back who, reliable, And then my probably where I grew the most, when I went to university, I did an engineering degree, and I thought I was Joe average there, and there was people that had come from other schools who had much better A level results than me, three A's and whatever, and I had an A, B, and a D, and but after the first year, I was one of the top students, and I was really surprised, and it wasn't that I was, working really hard. I was working steadily, so I was doing my work. I was, but I was also doing sports. I was playing for the university football team, and I found a good balance of, work and play. And it was through university. I did a sandwich degree, so I worked in industry throughout that for Procter & Gamble, and then in my third year, I switched to rugby. A friend of mine, my family friend, who's got five brothers, he said, "Oh, why don't you play rugby?" And he kept badgering me to play rugby, and I'd never played it before. And I thought, "Okay, I'll give it a go." Because football, I was a headless chicken. I was fit, but I wasn't skillful. And then, so they put me on the wing, as they used to do in those days. Yeah. I wasn't a big, 70 kilos or whatever. It wasn't big for a wing. I was skinny, skinny white boy on the wing. And on my first game, I scored two tries, and I thought, I quite like this. And
wow.
I found something I really enjoyed doing. And so when I came back to university after my placement, I switched to the rugby team, and I got into the first team at rugby. I ended up then going on to be the social secretary of the rugby team. And so through that, my confidence grew because, I was in a leadership position within the rugby team. I knew all the rugby songs, so, good memory. And, I was doing well at school, doing well in my studies as well. So that was a bit of a turning point for me in terms of confidence. But then I joined Cadbury on the graduate scheme from there. So
when you was growing up, jumping into varsity or university, sorry for our English folk, engineering, was there something? I ask a lot of my guests as a child growing up, was there something you wanted to be when you took on the real world? Or not?
No. My logic was, what am I good at? I'm good at maths, physics, so what? And I looked at options as degrees, and engineering, I did mechanical engineering, which was the broadest type of engineering. Mm. So I was almost just thinking, what am I good at and what I'm interested in? I wasn't seeing myself as an engineer in the future, but I just thought, here's a subject that gives me lots of opportunities of different careers, and it's quite broad. So, and I'm okay at maths. So let's go into that, and then I'll see what happens. And then as I went through it, I thought production was actually quite a good. I quite enjoyed that versus pure engineering. Production, you're starting to deal with people. So my first job within 6 months as a 21-year-old or whatever, they put me in charge of it was a factory in Sheffield in the north of England. They do Bassett's licorice all sorts.
Bassett's all sorts, yeah.
Bassett's jelly babies and so sugar confectionery, and they put me in charge of a line, doing these products. And I'm sure the guys pulled the wool over my eyes, but it was just a great experience of, I don't think I was a leader at that time. I was just a manager, managing stuff. Certainly wasn't leading the people or motivating the people.
Yeah.
But I had a great, my second role, I went down to a factory where I was department. They made me department manager for about 30 people, which is about a year and a half later. And I had a fantastic boss, a Welsh guy called David Richards, who, was the first guy I'd had who took me to one side and coached me. He said, "Look, I'm going to, there's a person who's going to be made, he's going to be sacked today." And I think, shit. This is going to be a tough situation. Mm. And he said to me, "Look, I'm going to walk you through. You're going to be a witness for this. I'm going to walk you through And this guy's going to feel bad. He's not going to be angry at me. He's going to feel bad at what he's done. And, you know, and I thought, no, this isn't, he's going to be angry, he's going to be upset. But it played out exactly as he said. The guy was remorseful. He said, oh, I shouldn't have done that. You know, and he was, I think what he showed me was compassion, which is one of the things I've taken through my leadership, you know, that the importance of compassion, even in a situation where you're firing someone, you're compassionate to that person, you are empathetic, you're caring about them, you're not just discarding them for what they've done. So it was a real lesson for me. The other thing I really remembered him saying to me was, at the time my dad passed away, and I remember clearly, it was many years ago, he said, look, he said, we make sweets here. He said, you know, that's not important.
No.
Just go.
Get away.
Yeah. Go back to your family. So, and it was him showing compassionate leadership and trusting me. And, you know, so I think it was, you know, he was probably the first leader that I thought, wow, what a leader.
I can see it. I can see how you're sharing that story with me. And it's funny that many execs I get the pleasure of working with, they share some people that have really not affected or infected their career, but really shaped their career. And that guy's clearly put a lot of value into you and a lot of values that you hold today.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that was my... Because I'd had line manager before that, but I didn't really... They sort of told me what to do. They didn't really inspire me. He inspired me.
So growing up, no real course of action, no kind of direction. Got into a good couple of roles, and as the story progresses, as you say, here we go. The New Zealand piece. I'm here, you're here. We're both Poms, Irish Poms, Hungarian Poms, whatever you want to call ourselves. But why New Zealand?
I got to a stage. So I moved from engineer or production to marketing, and the reason I did that was because I was getting frustrated in manufacturing. I'd get the line more efficient. We'd churn out more product, and the marketing would say, "Oh, you need to slow down now." And I had to make some people redundant on a line that I'd doubled the efficiency on. I was really frustrated. I think, what the hell are these marketing people doing? You know, why can't they sell the product? So I wanted to get to the other side to figure out, you know, learn a bit about that. So I did a course in my own time, and then got a secondment into marketing. And then after a couple of years there, I thought, you know, be good to travel within the company. So I sent my CV off to people I knew within Cadbury in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, because I wanted to go English speaking, similar type culture. And job happened to come up in New Zealand. I'd already booked a holiday there.
So coincidentally, you were coming up.
Just coincidentally. Yep. So we had a video interview, and I said I'd catch up with them when I was out here. So I, funnily enough, booked a... I had a camper van, and we booked... to be in the Avondale campsite, which, if anyone doesn't know, Auckland, Avondale is probably one of the worst places you want to go for it. It's certainly not picturesque. Or
I hope I've not lost any of his listeners now. Because
yeah, no, so a Vondelay, but no, it was. So I had, you know, I met with them. I liked what I saw, and you know, I came over here in 2000. So that was New Zealand. That was probably my viewers would be here for 3 or 4 years. You know,
but here we are,
18 years later. Still,
and we'll come on to that, and thank you for sharing with that, mate. But you've been in an industry for many years, and people come, people go. But what do you truly love about your industry? What do you really forget the business that we're working in or the businesses you've worked in? What really do you go, Nick, that's pretty special why I'm working in this industry?
Well, I think I've always been involved in food, and I think, you know, food's the basics of life, you know, and you can get pleasure out of things you make, and you can feel good about, you know, you're making food. So, you know, I've always really enjoyed that, and it's always changing. There's always innovation, new products, so it's... You know, I'd struggle to work in a steel industry. I know it wouldn't have the same appeal for me. But food and food that you're, you know, stuff that you're getting at the supermarket,
So do you walk around the supermarket looking and your eyes are wide open?
I'm terrible. If I ever go on holiday with my wife, you know, and I go into a supermarket, I'm just down in different aisles, and she knows she's lost me. Because I'm always doing, looking out for new products and new ideas, and or on the web and things like that. So, you know, it's just fascinating to see the progress and changes within food. You know?
It's immense, isn't it? And just coming over today, I was listening to a radio show, listening to the plastic bag issues and the huge world issue we've got with plastic and recycling and everything that goes along with that. So bearing that in mind of what you love about your industry, what are some of the barriers, or not necessarily barriers, but as a CEO in a food-related industry, what are kind of some of the challenges coming at your industry do you feel?
Well, there are the, you know, recycling and environmental issues. And we're working on how we can get more recyclable material into our products, which is a great challenge, and we've got people passionate about that. I think the other ones are, you know, food prices and raw material prices. You know, we're impacted by global changes, euro, you know, US dollar. So, and the difficulties, a lot of the times you can't pass them prices on to the to the supermarkets. Mm. So your input costs are going up. You're not getting more for that. So they're some of the biggest challenges. Labour is another one. Just actually getting good people. We've really struggled to find good people. We've got vacancies. We can't fill the vacancies with permanent people. So, as employment becomes lower, it becomes really hard to get good talent into the business. So I think there's some of the key things on my mind. But there's also lots of opportunities within the business as well. So, health and safety is one that I'm really passionate about. And New Zealand's has a terrible record in that area. So, that's something I'm working at an industry level as well, looking at how we can learn from each other. Because it's an area, one of the only areas that businesses can openly share what they're doing.
And feel comfortable sharing.
There's no IP or... No. Issue with competition in that area. We just don't do that very well at the moment, but there's certainly huge potential to do that in the future.
And that's something you're actively...
Yeah, so I set up a safety group. I'm on the Food and Grocery Council board a few years ago, and I'm now working with a number of people, including the retailers, to look at how we, in the area of things like transport and mobile equipment, how we make that safer, how do we standardise across the industry so that a truck driver coming onto a site in Delmain, knows that the rules are going to be the same whether they go onto a Coke site or a foodstuff site or a Countdown site or a warehouse site, So there's some of the things that we're working on, and there's a huge amount in that area that we're going to put effort into. And again, to me, it comes down to compassion. Safety is about compassion. It's not about compliance and the law and
ticking a box exercise.
It's about, you want people to go home to their families and safe and sound every day, so that's how I talk about, and I think it's a really another leadership of lesson I've learned is about framing your communication. So I could talk about safety in terms of, if you don't do this, we're going to discipline you. If you don't follow the rules, if you don't do that, it's the law. We have to comply with this, And people go, God's sake, that's the reaction. If I say to them, I want you to go home to your family safe and sound. I want you to be able to play with your kids. I don't want you to be in hospital. I don't want to have a conversation with your wife or husband that, we've injured you. That's not where we want to be.
And that's that framework.
And that's how so it's framing it around we care, as opposed to, I want you to be compliant.
And here's a stick and you will do it. That's gone. It's going relatively quickly, which is great.
It is. And I think that's when you start going, actually, I need your help to help you and us be safer. So you're the experts on your machine, your line, I'm not going to come down and tell you what to do because I'm not an expert on that. So the people who are in the best position to improve our safety are the people working every day on our lines. We just have to let them speak. We have to listen to them, and we have to act on some of the things they're telling us, because I think sometimes, we've not listened to people. We haven't given them a voice, or they've complained and fed back, and we've just done nothing about it. So they go, okay, they're not interested.
yeah. maybe a video blog, whatever you want to call it, that you've been doing around that. And I've seen a few of the things where you've been in your high-vis vest and you're kind of cruising around talking to people. Yeah, hearing the voices of those that it's affecting is so compelling. Mm. Not just that leadership as you're sitting here with me today, you know, that CEO position, but that this is what me, he or she on the ground are seeing and facing and sharing. That could be a really that could be quite an insightful thing for leaders looking at it another way.
Yeah.
But we digress, I know, and that's part of this podcast. We will certainly digress. It's not scripted by any stretch. So, successfully appointed CEO May this year. Congratulations again. 3 or 4 months into the role, I want to explore a few things with you, if that's okay. And you know, many people I work with, there's a common anxiety or fear or excitement. You know, as you leave one organisation and you join a new organisation, it happens every day all around the world, we know. But you'd been at Mars for a really healthy length of time, 2007. What have been some of the emotions that you wouldn't mind sharing with us around leaving that business, closing the door, and then say the next week or the next few weeks opening the door here at Dalmain? What, just talk us through those emotions and how that made you feel as a human.
Yeah, there's a raft of emotions, and there still are a raft of emotions 3 months in. I think there's obviously excitement about a new challenge in terms of, you know, it's different. It's I can make a difference here. There's probably fear. There's fear. Will I succeed? Will I be given the time to do what I want to do? Will I be able to make a difference in this place? So I think there are a couple of things that come up. There can be, I think, in the early days, frustration that, you know, you see opportunities or you see issues or waste, and you know, you think, oh God, how does this happen? You know, so there's frustration, there's impatience, certainly with me, that I want to do everything tomorrow and I know I can't, and I've got to really dial myself back. what other emotions? It's been a bit of a roller coaster actually, because you know, you have a bit of a honeymoon period, and then you go, oh shit, now reality's hitting, and you know. What's my focus going to be? And there's almost an expectation that people are looking to you to, you know, for the answers. I think the reality is I don't have all the answers, and you know, I'm going to use the leadership team and develop the leadership team and you know, try and get the answers from people within the business, because you know, as I've gone around talking to people, a lot of people know the biggest issues and the biggest opportunities. You know, so I'm not going to come in with some magic formula suddenly change this business. You know, if that's what people think, that's not, you know, what
your mandate.
No, but it's, you know, the emotions change every week. I mean, I think pride is one that I've had as well, because you know, I think I have made a difference in a short period of time. You know, I'm getting feedback from people that, you know, the feel of the place is different. You know, it's great that, you know, you're coming down talking to us on the floor.
Wonderful.
You know, we've never had a CEO that, you know, in all the companies I've worked for, that's come and talked to me on the floor. Mm. So, and I'm trying different things. You know, things that I probably haven't done before. Or I've taken stock of, did quite a lot of reflection on my time at Mars and thought about, okay, so what did I do well here, and what would I do differently if I, you know, in the new role? Mm. So it was good to have a little bit of a break. Just to say, actually, I think I did these things well. Actually, I could have done these things a bit better. I've taken on a bit more of a, you know, playing the things, being a bit more curious, being trying a few new different things. Some things have worked, some things haven't.
Of course, some things have worked.
I'm also really keeping some time in my diary to review the week. So worked, what didn't work, what am I going to do differently next week? But I think probably one of the biggest learnings was just about spending time with people and valuing spending time with people. So I probably sat down in my first 8 weeks with about 50 people in the business. Business has got 250 people. Plus I've been talking to people on the line as well, outside of that. And just simply to get to know them, who they are, what makes them tick, you know, a little bit about their family. And then what do they see as the biggest opportunities and biggest issues? And if they were me, what's the first thing they'd work on? Mm. You know, so out of that, I've got a huge amount of insight. and common themes that have come across, and I've started to feed that back to people and just communicate my thoughts back to people. And even though it's not a finished article, here's what I'm thinking at the moment, here's what I'm seeing, and just the response to that has been really positive.
Isn't that wonderful though? And you know, for those people listening and hearing that, how many books do we read? How many things do we hear in the press and the media where the chair or the CEO, he or she, is just absent? They're not in the business and not spending time. And again, timing is everything with how we all work in this world. But just seeing that transition from Mars and now into here, you know, that kind of window of time, you've got time on your side to a certain extent to really explore and understand people. You only get that first time to make that first impression, and I think that's gone a long way. I don't know what people say of you in here or anything. I don't need to, but just how you've shared that with me about spending the time asking your leadership team what do you see, what do we need to do, as opposed to we hear and see people coming in and just again slamming down on the table, this is what we're doing, this is my 5-year plan, this is my vision statement, over to you.
Yeah.
And I think maybe in 10 years time you'll look back and who knows where we'll both be or what you'll be doing, etc. But it'd be interesting to see how that kind of evolves. But I know it's really hard to leave an organisation that you care so much about and you've invested so much time, and sometimes you need to look at your own self-development, you need to look at your own self-value, and if it's not quite right, then you move on and try something else. Values, core values, I work with execs, I work with people, and they're very much looking what I'm trying to get him or her to do, and it sounds a bit cliche, and I don't mean it to be, but core values inside who you are, working on those inner values, working on those, what makes you tick in plain English before trying to present it and slam dunk it, as they say. But over the years, how do you feel your core values have maybe developed to today? What would you say around your core values?
Yeah, I think some of my core values would be around learning, learning and curiosity. I think one of the central things to what I, important to me. I think family is another one that's obviously developed, and it does develop as you have kids. But family in a wider sense of, Mars was a family-owned company, I wanted to make New Zealand, Mars New Zealand, a family organisation, and that's, by the time I left, it was a family. People talked, cared for each other, and I felt that we'd achieved that. And so that's one of a core value here, that this, again, Delmain is essentially a family-owned company. And I want the same sort of feel, people are caring for each other and like a family. Winning is really important to me, so winning in terms of the market.
Interesting.
But not at any expense. I'm a very competitive person, I do quite a bit of off-road running, and anyone who knows me knows I'm very competitive, so they're playing me at table tennis, I want to win. We have a table tennis competition at Mars, and I was I left and I was undefeated, so I was, that's great.
Let it go,
it's in the past.
But you have these innate traits, and whether it's winning, whether it's whatever those values are, working on those and sharing those, that's going to go a long way when you're in a business, whether you're at the top of the tree or at the bottom of the pile, it doesn't matter. But so many leaders forget it. So many people, so many leaders, so many execs forget what's dear to them, and they hide behind that I need to be seen as strong or self-assured or self-aware. And excuse my French, but bullshit. Really think about what's inside, because when you're trying to make change or do things that are going to resonate with your people, surely they who know you really well are going to follow you to the hill. I don't know if I'm speaking out of school, but I just really believe in that. I think that's the essence of any of us, isn't it?
And I think it's really important to know what your people's values are. And obviously, I think at Mars, one of the values I took, is mutuality. Mutuality is one of the core principles at Mars, and I really like that as a value in terms of, if the company wins, but the customer loses, the imbalance isn't going to work long term. If the customer wins and the company loses, it's not going to work. And it's the same internally. If the leadership team, do well out of the business, but the people at the, you know, on the floor don't, that's not going to work. You know, so anything we do, it's got to be a mutual gain, which is, you know, all parties win.
That's wonderful. That's
ultimate. Good. So, you know, I'm thinking about, okay, if the business grows, develops, we improve our profit. You know, how do we make sure we're paying people well in the future, yep. and we're not just cutting costs? And you know, that wouldn't work with me. You know, that's
but any firm can come in and cut costs.
Yeah,
firm can take a number. Yeah. Spit it out at what expense? Human expense, typically. But those businesses that are leading and doing pretty amazing stuff are what you say. How are we going to share that? Mm. How are we going to make that work for everybody? And I think that resonates really well, and that comes through really clear from your side of things. August, CEO. We talk about visions. We talk about core values, but leadership. We're not born. None of us are born to lead. None of us are born to stand up and, you know, get the troops behind us. But what's your way of leading? And again, leading today, and how do you go about leading, do you feel?
Well, I've thought a lot about this in the past, and I think everyone's a different leader. You know, you pick bits from leaders that you've had throughout your career, and you go, I like a little bit of that, but I don't like that part of them. And so you end up being a mix of, you know, I think your own personality and then who you like along the way. So to me, my type of leadership is more, it's inclusive. So I'm not a, you know, I used to think leadership was about, you know, doing an inspiring speech and rallying the troops and, you know, the sort of JFKs or, you know, that type of thing. And that you're inspiring when you're like that. But what I've learned is actually, by showing humility, which, you know, that's a great trait of a leader. If you can actually admit your mistakes, you can say where you've gone wrong, and that really, I think, bonds you with your people, because they go, well, this person doesn't have an ego. They're, you know, like, they're admitting their mistakes. So I think humility is one that, you know, is really important to me. And I think just, my type of leadership is, how do I get to know people, and how do I get to unleash their potential? You know, so the more people I can get involved in, you know, caring about this business, growing this business, you know, the better. You know, so it's not about me telling people what to do, because I don't have the answers. It's about me enabling people, and then I'm sort of the architect, if you like, helping the leadership team to paint the picture, and the rest of the organisation is colouring in some of that picture. And you know, it's going to change. You know, it's not a once a year you do your strategy and that's it. It doesn't change. To me, it's, you know, we've got to be flexible. We've got to keep listening to customers. We've got to keep listening to staff. We've got to keep looking at the, you know, what the competition are doing, what the trends are. So it's that curiosity, being really curious, and it's about creating space to, you know, develop the future. So if everyone's busy all the time, then you're just going to be stuck with what you've got currently. If we can, you know, I'm really looking at how we free up space. So any meeting, one of the things I started here was just reviewing meetings. You know, give it a rating out of 5. You know, put a point in the sand. So you might say it's a 3. Okay, it's a 3 out of 5. What would make it 4 or 5?
So 5 being great.
5 being great, being perfect. Okay, yeah. 1 being crap. Yep, you know, I've given a couple of meetings a 2, but you know, but then you.
Where are we right now? Just don't hurt me. Where are we right now?
I think 4, 4.5.
Oh,
yeah.
Carry on.
But you know, I think it's just, it gets people. You hear a pit, so it's going around the table. Everyone has a voice, so you can't cop out. You know, and everyone puts a stake in the sand, and then everyone says, okay, why? You know, and then that's, to me, it's about learning, because you said it's a 3. Okay, what can we do differently next time? We can do this and this. Okay, right. So we're going to try and improve this, and that to me is just all about learning. It's all about saying, here's where we're at, here's what we're doing really well. And I think one of the probably things I've learned over the years is I can be too focused on what we're not doing well and not enough focused on what we do well. So that recognition and appreciation is a piece that, you know, I have to work more on than maybe some other people, and just look for what's right more than just seeing what's wrong.
Celebrate
successes and progress along the way, and not just wait for the end result to say, now we'll celebrate.
Brilliant.
You know, so that's something I'm trying to think about. How do I recognise people for the effort and for what they're doing, not just the end result?
I'm asking a lot of of people at the moment, because it's invaluable information from a coaching point of view, but the kind of tools and systems technology that people use. But as a whatever role you play, are you finding tools or systems that help you to, you know, make your time good time, or are you still evolving your systems, your personal systems?
I don't have anything, any particular tool. Yep. I use Outlook in terms of just blocking out time in the diary for, you know, on Friday to review the week. Mm. I use Evernote to make notes of, yep, of things that, you know, I've got a list of people and interests so that I can just refer, because I don't see the, I get into the factory as much as I can. I've asked them to send me photographs of people so that I can, brilliant, again, people, brilliant, who I don't see that often, I, brilliant, can just have a quick look at the photo. Oh yeah, that's Mika or whatever.
You should have, as we walked up the stairs, you should have maybe a pictures of all your, like,
yeah,
a weekly, I don't know, I'm not telling you what to do, but that kind of weekly star employer, or week, somebody's, well, actually, be on, that'd be lovely to see you walk up the stairwell, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we're actually saying that we're going to do that. Oh, we're doing the, well done, we're doing it in the lunchroom, so,
brilliant,
we're actually going to put the Hall of Fame sort of in terms of employee of the month, things like that. But yeah, it's things like that, so that, like, Evernote's quite useful just to, yep, make notes and keep to remind me from time to time. But I don't have anything sophisticated outside of that.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple.
I think I like the technology. People come up to you every day and they go, oh, I've got a great new tool, great new widget. And it's like, oh, pen and paper, please. I know that sounds really old school, but everyone's got to work differently, and it supports and whatever, yeah, whatever you're doing.
WhatsApp's another one I probably use too. We have a WhatsApp group with a leadership team. So in terms of just doing...
Are all your people
social,
here? Are all your people based,
yeah,
here? So,
yeah.
Okay.
Just, you know, if I'm doing something, or I see something when I'm out doing it on the weekend. So it's more social than...
Supermarket.
Than work. Supermarket, yeah. Taking pictures. So I think things like that are just simple little...
Okay. Yeah. So priorities. You know, as a leader, as an exec, very much so, you know, the buck stops with you, as they say, as a CEO. And I feel it's a lonely place for many, and a lot of people find it fun, find it scary, whatever it might be. But what do you say, or what do you see being the three top key priorities to any CEO?
I think the first one is, you know, be connected with your people,
yep,
and get to know them. So, because I think that's where you get a huge amount of insight. So by doing that, I understand where the tension points are in the business, the frustrations, the opportunities, you know, so that's a real big one for me. I think the other one, obviously, as a CEO, is you need to, with the board or the owners, make sure that the expectations are clear and, you know, what they want out of the business. Mm-hmm. So it's balancing, you know, and balancing their needs and their expectations and managing those, because obviously that's one of the things for me that I haven't really had a board in the past. I've just had a boss in Asia. Mm-hmm. So, but I've, you know, I've got the expectations and then I've said, here's, and push back in terms of, here's where I think the business can go and,
right,
here's why. So yeah, that's an important relationship. And then I think with the, you know, the leadership group, my direct reports, it's about how we paint the picture for the future. So that's something I've been focused to try and develop fairly early, because there hasn't been a future for people, mm, in terms of, I'm not sure where we're going, where Delmaine's going in the future. So I've tried as much as possible to work with them and a few other people early on to say, you know, where do we see the issues, opportunities, risks, and, you know, it's a fairly simple process we went through to really pull out where are the key points we should be looking at, and then what's our aspirations, and then, okay, now I can start thinking about how do we create a roadmap of stepping stones towards that point.
To then implement.
To implement. And I think it's, we're getting to the point now of, okay, making sure we're realistic on the key things, you know. And I think the danger is you can try and bite off too much, and I have done in the past. And what I always want to do it tomorrow, I always think, oh yeah, that's, we have to do that, but it'd be great if we can do that, and that. And it always looks good on paper. There's the optimism bias that, you know, you can do everything and nothing will go wrong, or your day job doesn't come into it. But, you know, I think it's another great learning I've had is, you know, thinking what's the one most important thing. You know, there's a great Billy Crystal film, I can't remember the name of it now, but there's a great scene in it with, you know, where he talks to the cowboy and the horse, and, you know, what's the secret of life? And he says, it's the one thing.
One thing. That's right.
Just the one.
Just that one thing.
What's the one thing? Yeah. You've got to figure that out. So you know, and I that really resonated with me in terms of, you know, when you say to someone, and we go around the room on our weekly meeting, what's your one priority for the week? Mm. People will say, well, I've got this. No, what's your one thing? You know, you're only going to do one thing. But if you could only do one thing that moves you a little bit closer towards your, you know, quarterly priority or your yearly priority, what would that one thing be? And I think people really struggle to focus
on even one thing, and
so the noise of the job takes over, and you find that the noisy stuff gets done, but the priority stuff doesn't. Yeah, so it's about making sure that we're really clear on what the core focuses are, and we have a plan in place to just shift them forward, so that at the end of the week or the end of the quarter, we can say, yeah, we've made progress on the key areas.
And as a CEO, you know, it's three priorities to any business. You know, it's going to be different to everyone. And I remember when I started coaching at the very senior, and then I was there. You kind of picture an elephant in the room, and you think, oh, your coachee's going to eat that whole elephant today. Mm-hmm. And I've peeled that back myself. So I'm learning, you know, people are short on time. They're short on commitment. So maybe one or two things, go away and really take ownership of that, and then let's move on another thing. But rather than trying to do everything at once, and it's funny, the more senior execs I'm having on the podcast and meeting and coaching, whatever, their priorities are one or two things, and it makes an immense difference to the whole business. But again, we get lost in technology, we get lost in the noise of the business, and we sometimes as humans just forget what we're trying to do, and it's just spinning plates, isn't it? That's really good that you shared that, and thank you for that. People in your career, and the people that have influenced your career, from a, you know, you mentioned the guy at the beginning, from the working on the shop floor, but is there anyone else out there that you feel in business or in sport or in whatever that have helped you or making a difference to what you're doing?
Yeah, there's probably a couple of people. There's president I had in Asia Pacific, a guy called John Interbrett, a Dutch guy. Now he was just so visionary, and you know what I learned from him was around curiosity. He just had, you know, this. Yeah, you go to him, and I'm coming from an engineering background. I'm quite logical and rational, you know. Whereas he would say, you know, how would you do that 10 times faster? You know, I'm going, you know, so if you only had a week to do that, how would you do it? You know, and so I think the art of, he was great at the art of asking questions, and you know, he would paint a picture. He was useless at detail.
Forget the detail. There's others for that. Yep.
Useless at detail. But he was very inspiring, and he could paint a picture of the future, and then he would get other people to help fill that picture in. You know? So I think that to me was his visionary skills, to, you know, in terms of, got me to sort of move from a logical way of thinking, which is, you know, can be incremental in thinking, to actually, if you jump ahead and did that, how would you bridge that gap? What would you be? And that's where some of the great entrepreneurs come from. They don't iterate. They just jump to a point and say, this is the bold goal, and you know, we're going to figure out a way. You know, so he was one that really helped me. The other one was Sylvia Burberry, who was my GM at Mars, and I took over from her. And again, I think for her, I learned a lot around culture and developing culture from her. You know, Mars was in a very similar place to where we are at Delmaine in terms of culture when I started. Very low engagement, and we had a plan. We worked in terms of how we started to, you know, get people working together and not working in silos. How we worked on coaching people and focusing on leadership in the business. And you know, over time, you know, we built a really strong business. You know, best place to work in New Zealand. So you know, I learned a lot from her approach and her coaching, because she would obviously coach me as well. So
that's really good. And I think we all lean on people every now and again throughout our journey, whatever stage of journey we were involved in. Now look, I know you were involved with a number of other associations, if you want to call it, in the past and even till today. And
One of the areas I wanted to just to touch on very briefly, and it's not a topic for today, but the work you've been doing with your marathon running up around the world, mental health. It's something that's, you know, it's something we shouldn't walk away from, or nor should we. I've read a fair amount of books into this, and just a caveat, if anyone, you know, anyone needs some help, I'll put some show notes up for some things that I'm doing as well, with some other things that would be useful to those that may need some thoughts or ideas on that. But two books I've read recently, Bipolar Expedition and An Unlikely Journey, written by Brian Colgate. It was a really interesting book of somebody growing the whole life and having depression and real anxiety issues. A wonderful book. And probably the book that we've all seen or heard of was All Blacks Don't Cry by John Kerwin. What's your involvement with the association, or what have you been doing? I've been doing some running and the New York Marathon, but just give me a sense of where that sits with you at the moment and the importance of that for you.
So I suppose I got into mental health through Mars, and we did quite a bit of work with our staff around just understanding what it is and how you would help someone if you spotted it within the business. And the more I found out about mental health, the more it's linked to, you know, organisational health and engagement. So if you have a poor culture, and a culture with blame and with, you know, fear, psychological fear, you know, that will actually could lead to, you know, mental health. Or if someone has mental health, it's going to make it worse. So whereas if you have a culture with you know, where there's high engagement and, you know, high trust, you know, you have then an outlet for people, if they have mental health issues outside of work, to actually share that inside of work. But also, I think you create the you create learning for people about coping and resilience. So you know, for me, having a high engagement culture, you know, to me, I think it's going to be positive from a mental health point of view. So that was one of the learnings I'd had. And I came across, obviously, the Mental Health Association. I've met with Sean Robertson, had a chat with him, and I, you know, entered the New York Marathon this year. So I'm raising money for mental health. We've got $15,000 so far. So if anyone wants to sponsor me,
when are you doing?
So November the 1st, I think, the New York Marathon is this year. Yeah.
Well, I'll make a point. There's a few things. I'll put some show notes up, but I'll put some links up in my things, and it will just go out and people can jump on. But tell us more about that too.
Yeah. So, that was, I thought, was a great fit in terms of what I wanted to do. And a story from Mars is, we had one of our associates who had, unfortunately, her husband committed suicide. And he had a history of mental health, and we really supported her through that. So it's not just the person, it's the person's family as well. So, you know, we really supported her and made sure she was okay before she came back to work. And just before I left, she gave me a book as a bit of a leaving present, that she'd written some notes to thank me for her support. And it's a book called The Resilient Farmer by Doug Avery. Sort of famous book.
Yeah.
So, which is, you know, it struck me as I felt very, you know, proud of getting that from her and making a difference to her and helping her through her journey in a small way. And I was actually speaking at a conference in March, I think, on, you know, mental health and engagement and the link between the two. And John Kerwin was actually speaking at the same conference around mental health. And I arrived a little bit early. I bought a couple of his books, All Blacks Don't Cry. And it was only the two of us in the room, so I went up to him and I told this story of this lady, Liz, who worked at Mars. And I said, look, it'd be really nice if you could just write her a note. So he wrote literally a whole page message to her. And I, you know, gave her that book, and it, you know, she was blown away by that. So it was,
I bet,
you know, the little things like that. And I think how you help people is around just showing you care, you know, that's being open to it, watching for it, you know. And I think that's, to me, that part of mental health. I'm not an expert on mental health, but that part any good leader should be able to do.
I went along, and someone I've known for a number of years, Sarah Carter, she sent through a link to send out to my networks. And last year, the Welsh referee, Nigel Owens, was over doing some referee work. Well,
that's what he does, he's a ref. He was doing, I think, Australia, New Zealand, and he was speaking at Northcote Intermediate School, and Sarah said, come along and listen to Nigel. And I went along for an evening with Nigel Owens, and wow, it resonated with me hugely, just the impact and what he'd gone through and what he'd faced, and read his book and other things. And like you, I'm no expert, but just going along and hearing those stories of what people face and how they try and get through it is just immense. He's also speaking, I think it's the 4th of September this year at Northcote. I'll put some links up, and he's selling tickets. But if anyone is interested in that topic, that's a fantastic. It's a fun evening. It's not a down evening. He shares some really good insights, some real personal insights, but he makes it sensible. So he brings humour, as only a Welsh ref can do. And it's a really good evening. So I'll make sure we put those notes up along with your run that's coming up, and hopefully we can keep some good messages going out there. So how do we switch off? How do you kind of switch off from being a CEO?
I practice mindfulness.
Headspace?
Yeah. Headspace. So I do try and do 10 minutes every day. And I literally, when I come into work, I sit in the car park and do 10 minutes in the car before
He's got a great voice, Andy, isn't he?
He's brilliant.
He's got a very, very good voice.
Very calming voice. So you do that, and myself and my wife do that. Occasionally we'll do some of that at home. I do a little bit of breathing exercises in the morning sometimes. Running, walking the dogs, a couple of dogs. I love to just, even though they don't need walking, it's more for me than them. So my wife's already walked them during the day.
We all need exercise.
I just drag them out again for a walk around the block. So yeah, just walking. But off-road running, I love doing. Go out with some friends on a Saturday morning, some bush around Auckland. Love listening to audio books. I've subscribed to audible.com.
Oh, that's good.
Yep, so I've had a few really good books out
there. There's another one that I've got introduced to recently. It's one that captures 15 minutes of a book, and if you like it, you can then get the full book. Right. I think Bits or it's something. It's like a library of books, right. And it's really well put together. If you like audiobooks, it's like a library of
books. Audible's really good. I mean, I subscribe, but if you don't like the book, you can just send it back. So yeah, reading or listening to books, listening to music, going to concerts.
Brilliant.
Just trying different. My wife likes to push me. She knows I can be a bit conservative, so she pushes me for either out of my comfort zone in food or whatever.
Well, look, we're going to wrap up soon, but because I know your time's pressing, you've got people to meet as well for the rest of the day. I really appreciate your time. But just wrapping up, the next 5 to 10 years, not yourself as a CEO, but just the kind of, what are the big skills that CEOs of the future may want to start thinking about now? Have you got any kind of thoughts around that, or is that a bit of a tricky one?
I think there's so much changing in the space of technology. It's just being aware of artificial intelligence and various other, keeping on top of that, because understanding what's going to work and what's not going to work. I don't see us anytime soon jumping on the back of anything around artificial intelligence, but technology changes so fast. You need to be aware of how it could help you. We're looking at robotics in part of the factory, that would be one I would say. I think the space of things like mental health becomes a bigger issue in the future. So people are getting more and more stressed, there's more and more pressure. Actually, that the basics of leadership and engagement become even more important for people. So there are probably a couple of things that are on my mind. And then, I think the environment, the link with the community, in the past, the companies were quite isolated. Now they're, they have to be so transparent across their products, across everything in their business, that, you have to be better at telling telling people about the company and your story, and I think one of the skills that's really important for a CEO is storytelling. So actually, there's not many people, when you go to a conference, who tells a really good story versus who uses PowerPoint to
death by PowerPoint
kill people.
Very, very interesting.
So actually, storytelling within your organisation to engage people, and external to your organisation, to whether it's customers or whether it's stakeholders is a real skill that I think CEOs need to be better at.
We've covered a hell of a lot, and I can only but thank you, and I really hope our listeners have got some really good insight from our conversation today, and thank you very much for your time. And it's been a huge privilege to spend some time with you and just to hear your thoughts, your insights and your kind of stories that you've been through, and I really appreciate those. So thank you very much for your time, and I hope you've enjoyed being a guest on our podcast, and thank you very much. But to all our listeners around the world, thank you very much for tuning in. How was the conversation for you guys? What did you take away from it today? Is being a CEO what you want to do, or maybe you want to move in a different direction? What tools or tips have you really, what's really resonated with you today? You know, send through your thoughts and your ideas, what you're seeing and what you're hearing. I really appreciate all the content and the information you send me. It really does help. Well, that's it for today. As always, please feel free to share this podcast around your friends, family, workmates. Everybody's welcome here. And if you can, subscribe on iTunes. That'd be wonderful and very kind. But wherever you are in the world, take care. Look after yourself and those you care about. And I'll see you all soon, very soon, on the Nick Rowell podcast. Take care.